know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's Monday, you know what that means. It's myself, Momoozy. Alongside me, as always, the three-time NBA champion and the one and only Mr. Scott Perry, a weekly family member here on the show. How you both doing?
Doing awesome, Mo. You see, I got my shot form going today.
So
I've been having a bit of a crisis with my jump shot recently. I've been losing this weight, and my frame is changing. And now the way I'm holding the ball is changing. I got a lot of work to do, so I'm gonna have to fly out there soon and get some help with it. But how you both keeping? Enjoying the March Madness so far?
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, as March Madness tends to do, it produces some big upsets. So, you know, I think that's what makes the tournament so engaging, man. So great to see. Hey, hometown university where BJ and I are from, Oakland University.
How about that?
Upset that? Over the Kentucky Wildcats.
They go to Oakland in Detroit.
Part. Yeah, it's Oakland University. Actually, it was about 10 minutes away from the Palace of Auburn Hills where we play with the Pistons. So so congrats to those guys, and they got another one today.
Have you got a pick to win it all? Ooh.
I'm going to go, you know, I favored UConn coming into this, so I'm going to stick with them. I think they were the most consistent team. And I know it's tough to repeat, but I think they were the most consistent team over this season. So I'm going to go with UConn right now.
BJ?
Well, you know, Scott took the word. I mean, UConn, to me, they look like the best team. They're well coached. They play a brand of basketball that translates, especially in tournament play. So I would say UConn, take the safe bet. And I'm not going to be a contrarian like my good friend Mo, who's gonna probably take Mo probably gonna take a 16 seed, you know.
Rip Hamilton, I'd probably be hearing from Rip Hamilton if he saw this and I didn't pick UConn. So
yes.
I hear it, man. Listen, I just want to see some good basketball. I really don't have teams that I root for. I don't follow the regular season closely enough to make a pick. But watching closely will be those players who chose not to go to college and play for the G League Ignite, who have now been shut down. The G League Ignite was a team, for any of you guys listening who don't know, it was a team created for guys to leave high school, and instead of going to college, they could play in the G League for a special team where they could get mentored by veteran players. They would make $500,000 a year. They finished this season 2-29, and the NBA has made the decision to shut that team down. I mean, they never really got a big crowd for their games. They never really had a top. I don't think their offense or defense was in the top half of the league the entire time they existed. The players, the notable players who have come out of there, Jonathan Kuminga, Jalen Green. Anyone else brings to mind?
Scoot Henderson.
Kuminga.
You mentioned Kuminga.
But yeah, Kuminga, Scoot Henderson. They've had a couple guys come out of there.
It's projected a few guys that are on the team this year that will be, you know, first round picks as well.
Are you guys surprised at this decision? What has been your make of the G League Ignite experiment?
I'm not totally surprised. I mean, you alluded a little bit in your intro in terms of it's not been a profitable venture for the NBA. You know, I'm sure it's a large line item expense for the league at large. While there was definitely, you know, what I thought, some very good benefits to it, you know, seeing young players be able to play alongside, you know, professional players, older players, and then compete against older guys, learn from former NBA coaches and players. So there was some value in that. You know, in talking to people around the league, though, here recently, when this announcement came out, you know, a number of people are pointing to one of the league's talking points, and that is the introduction of NIL to collegiate basketball now, that provides an economic avenue for top high school players now to be able to earn money by playing collegiately. And therefore the league didn't feel like they wanted to be in that kind of a competition for those services economically. And I'll make one last point about it. And BJ, and being an agent will remember this and know this well. When the reason why they, another reason why they wanted to start this here stateside was because there were a few players that left the United States after their high school careers to go play, you know, to sit out, quote unquote, sit out a year
yep.
before going to the NBA. And that was Emmanuel Mudiay, who I know BJ represented, as well as Brandon Jennings. And they both were lottery picks. And they, you know, Brandon, I think, played in Italy, and Emmanuel, if I'm not mistaken, he went to China, right, BJ?
The Guangdong Tigers.
Yeah, right. And so there was just a prevailing thought, why are American kids having to go that far, make that type of personal adjustment, let alone basketball adjustment, when we could try to develop them here stateside?
And it does make sense. I mean, I used to tell people here that if you want the league in the UK to grow, you should start recruiting all these top high school guys. But they never listen. Right. And Australia, funnily enough, did. They got LaMelo Ball. They've had a whole bunch of players now come through their system. BJ, what are your thoughts on, you know, you obviously love scouting players, right? So
yes,
you were working with Emmanuel Mudiay. How do you, from a scouting perspective, look at a player who's playing in the G League, or a player who's playing in college, or a player who's playing overseas? How can you judge the difference between the levels at which they're playing?
Well, first, when, you know, just in full transparency, when Emmanuel Mudiay made that decision, I was not working with him when he graduated high school to go over to China. I feel very strongly about this topic. As Scott know and people in the business, I spend a lot of my time, even to this day, on looking at the environments where young people have an opportunity to really get an opportunity to understand the game. You know, people work on their game, people do all these moves, so forth and so on, but those aren't the fundamentals of the game. There's only one thing that you can actually learn about the sport, which we call basketball, and that's the fundamental base. Now, all of the moves and things, that's kind of a new phenomenon, you know, the double step back, all of these things that people do. However, you know, I consider myself a purist to the game, right? It's about the game. It's not about me. It's not about what I know. It's not about I know more than other people. It's about what is the core of the game itself. And the game is about the fundamentals and how the game will be played. There's limitations to the to what you can and can't do and move in this earthly realm, if you will. You know, there's only so many things you can do. You can only jump so high. You can only run so fast. You can only do so many things. However, the fundamentals of the game is the one thing that seems to be in a transition right now because of the way we play. We're in an age of highlights. We're in an age of everyone's trying to develop. Well, it's very hard. If we want a better student, you have to have a better teacher. Okay. Right now, we are in an age where, without question, the best teachers of the game are in Europe right now. That's a fact. So all of these other things that we're talking about, it's about the teachers. If we want a better student, we have to have better teachers. And right now, you can look at the game, and we can put money, and, you know, Scott, you know, said it, you know, the NBA can, they can put money here in the G League. We can put money in all these different leagues. However, the biggest disappointment about all of this is, what are the requirements to be able to teach the game? When I came into this business, I had Hall of Fame coaches every step of the way, whether it was George Raveling, Tom Davis, Phil Jackson, Chuck Daly, da-da-da-da-da-da. Unfortunately, and I think I can say this, but I'm not trying to be critical of anyone, but now you're looking at the teachers of the game, and you're saying, okay, there's no wonder the way the game looks in the way it, it's no wonder why the game looks the way it looks right now. Mm-hmm. Because we see there has been a huge drop off in the teaching aspects of the game of basketball. Not who has the best play calls, Not who is a he's a coach. What is he? A player friendly coach? Not this guy is a all these terms that you hear. You know, this guy has whatever the case may be. He's not a he may not be, some of these coaches may not have been the best as far as media friendly, but these guys understood the fundamental core of the game itself. That's been the biggest drop off that I've seen. So right now, we're in a age as far as basketball, especially at the amateur level, where we're going to have to demand a level of excellence at that level in order to raise the buoyancy or the water or raise the level of play that will eventually what we're talking about, which is professional basketball. Now, we've had the one thing I will give a positive check to is at least we're trying things, right? This G League thing, check. Overtime elite, check. Academies that you're seeing pop up all around, check. However, you know, now collegiate basketball, at least they've changed something. You know, you have these transfer portals and NIL deals, and at least we're trying different things. Players are trying, some go to Europe, some go to China, some went to Australia, as you mentioned. At least we're trying. However, it's one thing that we can all say, there's gaps in all of them. Even the European model, there's gaps in all of them. So I think the basketball minds or the people who care about the game, this gives us an opportunity now to sit down to try to figure out what's going to improve the game. Not improve the business, but improve the game.
Again.
And if we can improve the game, then all of the other things in which we are all have benefited because of, right, which is the business, will naturally take care of itself. So if there's anything that I'm going to challenge everyone to do is let's sit down collectively to improve the game of basketball. The game that we love, not the game that we've all had an opportunity to live and do the business of. We've all done that, right? And we've all, myself, Scott, here, we're doing this podcast, all benefited from the game itself. However, what are we doing to improve the game? When is the last time we've done something to improve the game? So that's my only argument is now is an opportunity because the game is at a crossroad. We can see right now we don't have a venue in which our young players can come through to say, well, this is the road to becoming, or at least have an opportunity to become a great player. Now, it's just kind of a toss-up. And how many talented players have we seen where we have said the following: coulda, woulda, shoulda. We've said that. We're saying that more now than this guy is going to be a player.
Because now I think people don't realize, as great it is saying all these guys were picked in the end of the draft, the second round of the draft, how amazing they are. The unspoken part of that sentence is because they're so great, the guys picked at the top of the draft. Now, what's the point in having one of these really high draft picks if you're going to be able to find a guy in the second round where you're going to get better production out of instead of the big name? Do you get what I'm trying to say here?
No, I get what you were going. I wanted to go back to, you know, a couple of things that BJ was talking about, and I thought he made some tremendous points. One thing that I've always said, we must address and take care of the basketball business first in order for the business of basketball to be really successful. And I think that's where we're at right now. What you're talking about, BJ, we got to address this basketball business. That means getting back to the fundamental base. You know, you talked about the teaching of the game. See, I maintain we've got to go back, and especially over here in the United States, and you see it a little more over in Europe and in Australia and those places. You know, these academies for young people, and I'm talking about going back to starting at 10, 11, and 12, where you're developing fundamental habits of the game. See, what's happening now over here in the United States, a lot of those youngsters at that age are working on, like BJ talks about, you know, double step backs and all these individual
See, everyone
moves
wants the highlight for the TikTok.
versus really understanding, okay, what's shell drill? You know, what are the defensive principles? And what, you know, how do I feed the post? Or how do I pivot? You know, how do I handle the basketball? All of the fundamental things that we all grew up with. And what happened was, you know, years ago, we learned that at a young age. Then you became in high school. You were being taught that all over again, but you were going against a higher level of player and athlete. You moved on to college. Same thing. The consistency of message and teaching of the fundamentals was there. Now, BJ used the word gaps. There are a lot of gaps and spaces there. So now you're getting a tremendous athlete that's coming, you know, to a G League Ignite or to a college campus, but its fundamental base for the game is not as solid and good as it was years ago. And that's where, to me, we got to go back and fill in that gap and start getting the right type of teachers and people who can teach the game and get, because kids will follow what it was put in front of them. So you just, I think that's where we really have to go right now to start that process and then push everybody along through the system, getting consistent messaging, consistent fundamental coaching. And then I think you'll see an overall greater quality of basketball.
Yeah, I agree with what you both are saying. Just real quick before we move on to the next topic, Scott, I wanted your perspective from a front office point of view. When you were evaluating these guys to pick in the draft, how do you compare the guys who are playing in the G League to the guys who play in college to the guys who are playing internationally? Because college, you're playing against people your same age, the same kind of body build. Internationally, you're playing against grown men, and then the G League, you're playing, is kind of inconsistent. So how do you kind of level out and compare the three?
Well, let me just, I'm going to take you behind the curtain real quick and how I approach it. And I think a number of teams look at scouting this way and evaluating prospects through three prisms: eyes, ears, and numbers. Eyes, okay, that entails going out to scout guys, practicing, working out, playing games, studying, you know, hours of film to see, you know, to come up with an evaluation of what this prospect is strong and weak at. The ears, that is all of the intel gathering. That is, and that comes from, you know, interviewing, you know, coaches, peers, you know, if it's a college player, going back to his high school coaches and peers, talking to a number of people who this player has competed against to start to get a perspective of who the guy is as a competitor and as a person. And then also when you get the opportunity to interview these guys, you know, when you, you know, through the pre-draft process, when they come and work out for you, or you meet with them at the draft combine to get to know the person, that was always huge for me, because you've heard me say this before. You're not just getting the talent and skill level coming through the door. You're getting the person, and they're not mutually exclusive. They're coming together. And then the third part I mentioned, the numbers, and that's the analytic a part of it. And, you know, that is important, because I always utilize that to either confirm or not confirm what I'm seeing or what our group is seeing on this prospect. And you talk about comparing different leagues and the like, you know. So for example, you know, you know, I go back a few years, you take a guy like Ja Morant when he was coming out of Murray State. What I would do then is look at his numbers coming out of Murray State and then compare him to other top guards, you know, who had come out in the draft in previous years, say a Derrick Rose or Chris Paul or, you know, Russell Westbrook, and see how those numbers compared, and try to see, can you predict him kind of, you know, going into a similar space like that? And then, you know, if you look at the European players, you know, you watch a guy coming out of Europe, you know, who's, their minutes a lot of times a lot lower, you know, so you make them, you know, you want to compare, you know, this group of international players are coming out this year to maybe look at, you know, to a Luka Doncic when he was coming out, and kind of compare the numbers at the same stage. So a lot goes into it. And that was a real quick and brief tutorial of it, but just wanted to give our listeners kind of a broad overview of just kind of how you want to compare what you're seeing and what's going on with these players today, and comparing them against some guys who've had gone on to have success in the NBA, and what they were like when they were coming out of either college or the European game or G League Ignite.
Absolutely, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it towards the NBA draft. But we've spoken about the development from the grassroots of the game. Now let's go to the other end of the scales. I want your top five MVPs for this season in the NBA. Starting from five, going to one. BJ, I'm gonna start with you.
Well, listen, Jokic is one right now. So Jokic, I'm just gonna start. Jokic is one.
Okay.
I'm gonna just Luka Doncic is probably two for me right now. Shea is probably three. Four is Giannis, and five is Tatum.
Well,
That's where I'm at.
why is Luka ahead of Shea on your MVP list?
Why is Luka? The way Luka has been playing, his body of work, you know, I include your body of work. This isn't like a, you know, just a 1 year thing. Like, you know, you can have a shooting star, for instance. You can have a great year, you can have a great month, so forth and so on. Luka's been playing at this level for some time. Now, I think there's one thing right now, which is really holding Luka back from actually being the MVP. And I've been saying this for a couple years with him, right? His usage rate is incredibly high, but he's been playing at an MVP level for like the last, you know, I'm going to say about 3 or 4 years now. The one thing that's been kind of inconsistent with him is the play of the team. Okay, as far as his team being at the, you know, in the top, let's say top four of his conference. If he's in the top four of his conference, I think Luka probably is right there. I mean, his numbers are as good as anyone's, what he's been able to do. So, and the reason I have him ahead of Shea right now is because, you know, Shea just kind of, you know, like I thought he had a good year last year, Shea. I mean, he was first team All NBA deservingly. But this year he took his team to another level. Okay. And I think that says something. However, I want to see him do that now to say, well, this is who he is as far as his ability to play at this consistent level. So I think Shea has had an amazing year. I think he should be in there and get some first place votes. I mean, he's the jump he's made. However, for me, I like to take in the totality of what Somani's doing. And when I look at Luka right now, that's why I have Luka right now too. If you were asking me today, where they're at, but I mean, they could easily be switched around. And as I have a big premium on winning, all right? A big premium. But I want to also acknowledge that he's been doing this. I mean, Luka has been doing this now for quite some time. And if Luka was in the same spot right now as Shea Alexander, I think the narrative would be Luka would be the MVP of this league. Okay. That's why. And the only thing you can say is that they're, well, I don't know where they're at now, what, six, seven, or eight, wherever they're at,
They're
is
six. They're up to six now,
six. They're
but
up to
yeah,
six. So I
six.
think that's the only thing. That's the only reason why I have him there, is because of his body's work. Luka has been putting up these type of numbers, which we've come to expect,
The
and he's
MVP
delivered.
is the MVP for this season. Scott, let me hear your five before we
So we can hash it out. But
Yeah.
interesting, the names are the same, but the order is different for me.
Yeah.
And here's why. All right, I'm gonna start at number five. Giannis would be five for me. Just you know, having another terrific season. His basketball team has been a little up and down. Jason Tatum would be four, best player on the best team thus far this year. Having a terrific year. I'm gonna go with him. Number three for me is gonna be Luka. And you know, BJ talked about a premium on winning. And because, and I take the MVP of what's happening this year, and I get what Luka has done historically, and he's having putting up some historical numbers again this year. But they're in the sixth place. So that's the deciding factor for me why I have Shea at two. Not only is he one of the leading scorers in the league, he's leading the league in steals. He gives me a little more on that defensive end. And they've been sitting at the top of the Western Conference, you know, first or second for pretty much the entire year. So that's why I have Shea too. And I think we're probably all in agreement that the Joker's on his way to his third MVP. And no more, not much more discussion needs to be made
I
about
don't
it.
have
Yeah,
the Joker at number one on
exactly.
my list.
You don't have the Joker number one on
No,
your list. Oh,
I
okay.
don't.
I assumed you did it with you trumpeting the Nuggets all year long.
I know. I'm a. I got the Joker
But
of a Finals MVP. Don't get me
you
wrong.
got him as Finals MVP, but
Here's
not MVP of the league.
how I see it. I have number
Okay.
five. I have Luka
Okay.
Doncic because BJ
All
has a priority on winning, but it's put a
right.
guy who's losing a bunch of games on the top of his, even though he's putting up nice stats, cool. Yeah, if you're
Okay.
the 8 seed, the 7 seed, 6 seed, you're not really in the MVP conversation, no matter how good your stats are. I know Russell Westbrook won it that one year, but that was a unique circumstance of how he found himself with that makeshift squad, averaged a triple double, and that was great to be the 6 seed and win an MVP. Four on my list, I have Giannis. Giannis has put up great numbers, as you do. However, before the season, all the talk was, oh, the Bucks are going to be unstoppable because now with Dame spacing the floor, Giannis is going to get everything he wants on the inside and da 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 da. And it's just not worked. You know, you've also had the coach that you picked or the coach that they hired to get you to stay in Milwaukee. You got rid of him within a couple months. So, yeah, not off the hook for that. Number three, Jason Tatum, best player on the best team. No more needs to be said. Number two, I got the Joker. And at number one, I've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The reason being is they've been the number one seed or like number one or number two seed the entire season long. He's been, when you watch them play, he's like the focal point of their offense. Without him, you know, I think he's only missed one game so far, but without him, that team does not move whatsoever. I think as great as his teammates are, without him, they're nowhere near even close to the one seed. And the main reason I have him above the Joker is you could tell the Joker was pretty much just chilling until after the All-Star break. And now he's taking it seriously. And I want to reward the player that's been going hard the whole season. I think he's going to set a record for the most 30-point games in the season. And I think that that should be rewarded. Whereas the Nuggets, for me, kind of coasted a little bit and then flipped the switch as of late. With enough time to make up the gap between the one seed.
Was it that the Nuggets were coasting, or was it that the Nuggets were facing being the defending champs every night they went into an arena and getting the best effort from everybody
They are still the
three?
defending
And I take it.
champs.
No, I agree with that, but I'm saying it takes, and BJ could speak to this.
There's no
It's an
such thing as
adjustment period.
coasting. You
Yeah,
don't, there's no such thing as coasting.
there's an adjustment period when you are the defending champions, and now I don't care if you're playing the last place team in the league, you are getting an effort like no other every night, you know, thrown at you.
Yeah.
And I think it takes time to adjust to that and understand that. And then, you know, for guys to say, you know what? No, we want to do this again. And we
I
got to
hear
ramp
what
it
you're
up. So that's what
saying.
I'm asking. Yeah.
I
So
hear what
I'm
you're saying. And the way I look at this perspective is the Celtics, after they won a championship in 2008, they started the next season 27-2. The Golden State Warriors, after they won their first championship with Steph Curry, how many games did they go unbeaten the next season to begin the season? I don't think it was until the road trip where they went to see Milwaukee in November where they lost their first game. So it's not that, oh, we're the defending champs and everyone's giving us our best shot. Yeah, you're the defending champs. Come out here and play like it. And that's not a knock on them as a team to the point where I doubt their championship winning abilities, but it's just like, okay, cool. We won a championship. We know we're capable of doing it again. We know we're capable of flipping the switch. And you guys say that there's no coasting, but from the way that I've watched them play before the All-Star break to the way you watch them play now, there is a remarkable difference in that team. I don't know if it's just me that's seeing things, but I can
Well,
see it,
yeah,
and the
but
results
you
are
know,
speaking of
again, and
themselves.
I will say this too, a difference in this team too. No Jeff Green, no Bruce Brown off the bench. And so you were developing your bench early in this year.
That's valid.
You know, so guys like Peyton Watson and Bron from Kansas. You know, you already had Reggie Jackson, you know, and those guys, so you know what they can do. But they were trying to replace those guys too. And I think now they're starting to play a little bit better.
Yeah.
They're gaining more confidence too. And I think that's been helpful to the Nuggets' calls.
I was thinking about this the other day, Bruce Brown. I was reading from someone who was at a Raptors practice that Bruce Brown is now practicing with the G League guys to try and learn the offense that the Raptors are running. And I was thinking, this is the same guy that was so crucial in the finals to now he's at a point where he's practicing with the G League guys. And I'm like, maybe the Joker does make it. Maybe I can get you 10, 20 points if I got the Joker on my team. But, you know, that's how I was looking at it. So that's why the reason I've got Shea at number one. I think he's more than deserving of MVP this season. Although what I do have to say is I'm getting very annoyed with his grifting for fouls. He's encroaching Embiid territory with this. So that's just something I'll keep an eye on. Because anytime a defender comes near him, the flailing, this is the one that gets me. If you guys are listening on audio, you got to watch on YouTube. Guys, this is the one that gets me. Anytime a defender comes near him, he goes like this. Like, come on, man. What are you doing? Like, that's starting to really annoy me, but that's who I got number one on my list. I mean, Luka Doncic, as much as you can put the blame on his teammates and the roster that's around him, it's winning games. Do your stats transfer into winning? That's
BJ brought up a point, and I'm going to let BJ go, but in terms of guys having done it over no number of years, I do think voters for this award take that into account a little bit, you know, a historical ramp up. So for me, with Shea having an all-NBA season last year, knocking at the door this year, I think coming into next season.
Yeah, now you're talking.
He's going to be a guy that could be an odds-on favorite to win it, assuming that he plays, you know, close to where he's at now, and the Thunder are up in the top two or three in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a single season award. So
yes, it is. But I'm just saying, but interesting. But you build up equity in the voters' minds. Yeah. That, okay.
The thing with the voters, and this is why I don't really believe in the MVP award anymore. The voters are ridiculously bad. So like last season, Joker's not the MVP because he can't play defense and he's never done it in the playoffs. So instead, we're going to give the MVP to a guy who loses in the second round every year. Like, come on. What are we doing here? But I don't believe in the MVP, but that's a whole nother conversation. That's a whole nother conversation. But before we get to the awards end of the season, we've got some basketball left to play. So who are you guys looking in on and watching this week as the NBA rolls on?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to watch two teams because they're locked in to one another as I see it right now. And those two teams are the Houston Rockets.
Oh, you took my team.
and Golden State Warriors. They're separated by two games right now from the 10th and 11th slots. And Houston has a favorable schedule coming up this week. They're at home twice to the Jazz and Blazers. They got a tough one on the road against OKC and then at the Jazz again. And then you look at Golden State's record, and they've been playing up and down, win one, lose one. We thought they had found some consistency, but it looks like they're leveling off. They are at the T-Wolves, at the Heat, at the Magic, and at the Hornets. To me, this week here is going to be highly determinative in terms of who's going to get that last play-in slot. I didn't think I'd be saying this a week or two ago. I thought it was pretty clear cut that both the Lakers and Golden State would be in. But now I'm not so sure. I'm a little nervous for Warriors Nation right now. Obviously, they have the wherewithal to do it. But it's going to be a very tense week if you're sitting up there in the Bay Area right now.
Yeah, the Rockets are on a 7-game win streak, 9-1 in their last 10. I want to see if they can maintain this, because oftentimes when a player goes down injured, in the case of Şengün here, the other players on a team kind of band together and raise their collective level of play as an immediate reaction. I want to see if they can sustain what they've been doing. Yeah. And I would love to see.
They've been terrific at home all season long, though. I give, you know, Houston has been really good at home. They were very bad first half of the season on the road. They're getting incrementally better on the road with their play now.
And of course,
team to watch out.
Steve Kerr beat Ime Udoka in the 2022 NBA Finals. I would love Ime to get revenge and send the Warriors out to play in. BJ, what's the team that you're keeping an eye on this week?
Well, it's two teams I'm keeping a close eye on. And we never, in my opinion and my view, I needed to finish up the previous conversation, but let's move on. I'm looking at Minnesota and I'm looking at Dallas. In this league, this particular year for me in the NBA, in the league, has been fascinating because no team, with the exception of the Boston Celtics, has really separated themselves. There hasn't been what I would consider a dominant team. Even though the Celtics have the best record, you know, I'm still not convinced that they are the most dominant team. And that takes me to currently now the sixth seed that's in the Western Conference because, you know, Mo said, well, you know, the MVP, he doesn't have confidence. Well, we do have confidence in the MVP because the best player always shows up at the end. The best player and the best team every single year since my involvement, well, really since the league began, at the end of the season when the smoke clears, there's always a best player. And for sure, there's always a best, the best team. Well, that's part of it. That's why I say body of work counts. Body of work counts because if you are the MVP and you're going to carry that, which for whatever reason in the media, it's a regular season award. Now, let's talk to the players. Everyone knows that your reputation is garnished or gained when the playoffs. That's where you earn your reputation. That's where you get your stripes, if you will. Now, you can have a great regular season, but if the playoffs were to begin today, the two best players, individual players in the playoffs would be Luka Doncic and Jokic.
And there's only one player. As well, when you say the two
I'm
best
factoring
players
in the
NBA
most,
players.
I'm talking the most influential players in the playoffs right now that could carry a series right now.
On offense.
Can carry it. Winning is offense and defense. And Mo, we're gonna separate ourselves to say old school and new school.
No.
But there's really no old school.
I hear
school.
From you that defense is how you win. And now you're telling me a guy who doesn't play defense would be the best player in the NBA playoffs.
Your best defense is your offense. Your best defense is your offense. See, there's levels to this game. see, there's levels to this. And when you win, you understand the importance of how you play offense if you're going to win. See, you just don't play defense and just be irresponsible on the offensive end. So you can't just do that. You can't just say, you said this. No, there's levels to this. We talked about it at the top of the show. The reason the game is in the condition that it's in is because we don't truly understand the fundamentals of the game. How are you going to be a great defensive team or a great defensive player when you are irresponsible on the offensive end? You can't just come down and just shoot and just dribble up to the three-point line and shoot a 35-footer and then say you're a good defensive team. You can't do that. You can't win if you're irresponsible on the offensive end because the game incorporates the totality of the game. So you just don't separate, well, this guy's a good passer. Well, why is he a good passer? Can you explain to me? Why is he a good defensive rebounder or offensive rebounder? You got to explain to me the why. You can't just separate it. If we were to start a series right now, Luka Doncic will be, with the exception, in my opinion, with the exception of Jokic, he will be the best player on the floor, the most impactful player. Because what he can do is he can dominate a game in a couple of areas. He will, without question, he'll be the best passer on the floor, with the exception, in my opinion, of Jokic. And offensively, he will require a team to stop him. And the way he plays, he will, when the game slows down, because it's going to slow down, he will be the most impactful player.
More impactful than Giannis.
At this, if you asking me right now, I'm not hesitating. He will be the most impactful player on the floor as is right now. Now, you got to go out and do it. But if you asking me right now, the only one I would say at the start of a series in game one, Jokic. But the rest of them right now, well, Luka has shown in the playoffs what he's done in previous years. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he's done against the Clippers, what he's done against, what is that?
I'm not disputing how great Luka is in the playoffs offensively. I'm just saying, if you're going to say he's the second best player in the playoffs, you can't be a guy who gets targeted on defense by the other team. In my opinion.
Every team gets targeted.
Every player. Do you have teams trying to isolate on Giannis?
If you are playing against a great player, okay? I'm going to let Scott, who's been, there's levels to this, Mo. If you playing against a great player, the last thing you do is not target that great player, because you got to incorporate that player for 40 plus minutes. You cannot allow a great player to not work on the defensive end. The number one, that's why I'm saying the coaching has to improve, because the first thing you do versus a great player is you have to incorporate that player, because you have to make sure that that player is working at his peak level on both ends of the floor. That's called will. Let's see if he really wants to do it.
I agree with that point, but I'm going to put Giannis in the group of best players on the court to be able to win the series.
As he should be,
because the difference with obviously Luka is a better passer than Giannis, better 3-point shooter than Giannis on the offensive end. I won't argue that, just his overall offensive field. They attack you in different ways. Giannis is attacking you downhill at the rim. He's putting pressure on your defense, getting into the teeth of your defense scoring. But when you try to go at him at the other end, he is just more capable to me than Luka Doncic of being able to sustain that, make defensive plays that are positive for the Bucks. So I would put him as the third guy in BJ's mix of other two guys who could take over and dominate the series. That's what we're hoping in Mo. You're hoping for the leprechauns over your shoulder from Jason Tatum this year. That he can take that, that he can take that next step.
Yep, absolutely.
Because offensively, he's gifted enough. We've seen that to beat the score. But now, can he make those grind out plays on the defensive end when it matters? Or when his shot is not going particularly well on a particular game, can he still figure out a way
how to
wheel his team to a victory?
Speaking of that, I watched them play the Bucks the other day, and the Bucks were without Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw away another 20-point lead. And I was freaking out in my living room. I was like, I was about to smash up my TV. Anyway, but down the stretch, here's what saved my TV from getting smashed up. Jason Tatum actually went downhill and got to the basket on three possessions in a row, and he got fouled on two of them, made a bucket on the other one. And that, for me, is the difference to the game against the Cavs before, or the other close games that they've had this season, where he settles for a sidestep three or a pull-up contested jump shot. He's now, I don't know if that was a one-off or if that's what he's going to continue to do, but make it a concerted effort to get attacking downhill and use his size and strength as an advantage rather than trying to be a fast player. But that's besides the point. BJ, you said you're watching the Timberwolves this week. Why the Timberwolves?
Well, I want to see how they're going to function and make the transition minus Cat.
Mm.
And as they begin to enter into the playoffs. Now, they've had a terrific regular season. Anthony Edwards, I mean, when you talk about highlights for this generation, well, this guy is everywhere. He's made probably two of the most incredible highlights on both ends of the floor in a long time. Okay, he's just been amazing. However, now he's going to have to shoulder more responsibility and meet the expectations of what a team that's been literally, they've been 1-2 all season. I think they're currently 3 now. So I'm really fascinated to see how this team is going to respond, how they're going to respond with the expectations, because we're expecting them at the very least to get out of the first round. And if the playoffs began today, they would be facing Luka Doncic.
To be fair, that
And I think that's a flip right now.
yeah, no, yeah,
Yeah.
That, that's a,
and
that's
you
a.
know, and you bring up Anthony Edwards. I think it's important for him if he wants to be the face of this league,
Talk to him, Scott.
he has to close out at least one playoff season this year, a playoff series this
Talk
year,
to him.
at least one. I don't care if Cat's playing or not; it doesn't matter. That part doesn't matter. No Cat with Cat in the, if
It's a fair
he
series
has to do.
because even without Cat, your power forward is still better than how
Oh
PJ
yeah,
Washington's been playing
yeah,
for
no question.
Dallas.
No, that's what I'm saying to you. But if you're Minnesota and you're Anthony Edwards, that's what's riding on it for him. We're talking about who's going to be the next, especially American-born player to ascend. You know, with LeBron and Steph Curry kind of aging, they work their way out of the game now. Who's up next? It's Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum. This to me, for those two guys, this playoff season is going to be huge.
And a
Huge.
reason, because what if it's 2 versus 7? What if it's OKC versus Dallas? Those are big matchups.
I think Dallas and New Orleans are the two teams I think capable of winning their upsetting the first round series. You know, the lower seed being the higher seed. I don't see many teams in the East doing that, depending on where the Knicks finish up in the Magic. But I think Dallas and New Orleans, depending on when Brandon Ingram gets back and the condition that he's in when he comes back from injury,
They
but
say
I
he's
like
out at
those
least
two.
2 weeks, and I think their schedule is going to stiffen up a little bit here, starting middle of next week. It'll be interesting to see if they hold on to where they're at right now. I mean, Zion's playing terrific basketball.
I don't know if both of you guys, but I'm interested to hear Scott. It's one thing that kind of, I think, Scott, when right around the time when you entered into the NBA as an executive, there was this huge shift. It was always there, but even more so now, is guard play, right? It's very hard to play without excellent guard play. When you won the championship there, you guys had Chauncey Billups. There's always been phenomenal guard play. I love New Orleans. I like their team, but I'm concerned about their guard play of being
No
able to
question.
play downhill.
No
Now, if
question.
they had an elite guard, when I say elite guard, not a guard who can score, CJ McCollum can score. A guard who can organize you, because you got to be able to organize your team, especially on the road. And if it's one thing that you can see with New Orleans, is they are really, you know, I think they're a tough team because of their talent, but they're a different team on the road. Sometime on the road, they just can't get themselves organized. And I think that's part of one of the reasons that this team, you can't say they're ready to take that leap yet. They have all the other pieces, but I don't think they have a player at the guard who can play downhill. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not.
Oh no, I agree totally with that. I mean, it's just like to use an NFL analogy. You're not gonna go on the road to win a playoff game with poor quarterback play. You need a guard, a guy who can organize you, calm the waters down. I mean, as great as Joker is, he's got a pretty good guard over there in Jamal Murray.
Pretty
They can
say
play
that.
down
You
here.
can say
He's
he's pretty good.
damn good.
He's
No,
all right. He's all right.
and I'm saying that a little facetiously when I say pretty good. He's damn good. But I'm just saying, so he has him, and is a defending champion. Look, the Celtics, you talk on the other side, your team, they're better this year. At least they've been better in the regular season. Because guess who they picked up? They picked up a damn good point guard too, and Jrue Holiday, who plays both sides of the floor. And so he's going to be very pivotal in their run to trying to win a championship. And as you know, you start going down the list of teams, I would doubt very seriously a team without one of those top point guards. Again, he doesn't have to average 25, 30 points a game, but a guy who is capable, because Jrue Holiday doesn't average that number, but a guy who is capable of penetrating the defense, putting pressure on that opposing team in that manner, and being able to organize and understand who to get the ball to and when to get them the ball. That is very important when you're talking about high pressure basketball, especially on the road.
Yeah,
I think it's a non-negotiable. I don't, you know.
Well, that's what they'd be trying to play Zion at the point guard, like, you know, they well, having, I mean, Zion bring the ball up and handle at the top, which I don't know. You know,
that's a nice novelty in the regular season when teams don't really have the time to prepare for you. You playing 3 or 4 games a week, and okay, you can do a little of that and maybe get away with that in small doses. But are you ready to say, okay, I'm going to play Zion Williamson 25 minutes at the point guard position in playoff basketball on the road in Dallas, OKC, Denver, any of those places?
No, that's not.
I'm not comfortable in doing that. And I doubt very seriously that Willie Green would be comfortable as a coach. He's like that.
Well, the team that I'm watching this week is the Miami Heat, because, you know, we all say the Miami Heat are going to turn it around when the playoffs get here, but the playoffs are almost here and they've not been looking very good whatsoever. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They've got 10 games left, or 12 games left in the regular season. Cavs, Warriors, Blazers and Wizards. So this week gets a little easier for them as the week goes on. But, you know, I've been a little bit concerned with them. They had their little grudge match with the New Orleans Pelicans, and Jimmy Butler guaranteed a win, and then they got absolutely whooped without Brandon Ingram and Zion having a terrible shooting night. So I'm a little bit concerned for everyone's favorite playoff upset team, the Miami Heat, but we'll stay locked in. Appreciate you guys.
Yes,
any closing thoughts for this episode?
We appreciate you, Mo. We're gonna reach into levels of this, Mo. You know what I'm saying, Mo? I will give you this assignment this week. I want you to understand this. If you're gonna be a great defensive player, you must be a superior offensive player.
I understand.
I'm not gonna let that slide. See, that is a Detroit definition.
I'm gonna tell you this though, BJ.
Exactly.
I'm gonna tell you this though.
Okay. Tell me.
A wise man once told me.
Okay. Wise man.
If I don't score, but I make sure you don't score, the score is still 0-0.
And a wise man once told me that, Mo, no matter what you do on the defensive end, you don't know what I'm going to do, because I got a shot for every occasion. Mo, I got a shot.
I'm not buying it.
Scott Perry and I saw a man that had a shot for every defensive assignment that you had.
Too many people walking around with shots for that many occasions.
Look at that one right now. That's why you call
it
parking lot.
Hey, Mo.
We're gonna have to see.
As much as I love defense and believe, obviously, the defense is the key to winning championships, I'm gonna share this last nugget to you. We're talking about sharing what we've heard from a wise man, and I want your listeners to look up this. I'm gonna quote this wise man. His name was Will Robinson. BJ knows who he was, but I want your listeners to go look him up.
The great Will Robinson.
He was a fantastic high school collegiate coach, scouted for the Detroit Pistons, Detroit Lions. I mean, his resume is extensive. He once told me, he said, "Scott, you see that score clock up on the wall? There's a reason it's up there. The team with the most points wins." I'll leave you with that.
Mike dropped it.
Exactly.
And, hey, you know the vibes.
Exactly.
You know the vibes.
And keep the score. He said,
you know the vibes. Now, I'm going to let everybody chew on that one. And then get back to us. You know what I'm saying? Get back to us and let that marinate.
But, exactly.
Let that marinate. We understand defense, but exactly. When you beat a superior offensive player, he's going to win that game, Mo.
We'll see. We'll see. Make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from.
You know the vibes.
Yeah. Exactly. Appreciate you guys. You keep doing the intro at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. Bro, come on. The offense never stops, Bo. That's what I'm saying.
But if you listen closely, the outro is offense too. Okay, subscribe to the show and get buckets.
That's right.